From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in 1984 with the release of a new book at the time on dating advice for young women. It was called How to Be Popular with Boys by Stacey Rubus. And the book offered this kind of guidance. Quote, always be a lady. Guys chug beer and belch, but they aren't attracted to girls who act crudely. In fact, most boys I know won't go out with a girl who's not a lady. End quote. Rubus urged young women to be careful not to upset guys because their egos are fragile, even if the guys deserve to be upset. She wrote, quote, when you're rude to a guy, you also run the risk of getting a bad reputation, being called a snob or a witch, end quote. And she didn't actually use the word witch. That was my edit. The book is filled with what is now considered spectacularly bad and sexist advice, but that's kind of how times change. No doubt people in the 1980s thought the advice from the 1950s was bad. Norms change. And in the Me Too era, there are some changes worth discussing. Author and social commentator Phoebe Maltz-Bovey aired some of her concerns this week. First, Maltz-Bovey says, everyone is worthy of basic respect, and social media makes it far too easy to shame and smear someone. She points out that there's a growing trend on social media to take and post screen caps of people's dating profiles, all for the purpose of mocking. The result can be thousands of likes or retweets and shares, mocking a person's best efforts to find a mate. And Bovey writes, quote, in my day, if someone was douchey but harmless, you had the option of not dating them without affirmation from thousands regarding your choice, end quote. Writer Kat Rosenfield responded that people who screen cap and mock other people's dating profiles should have their own dating profiles suspended. Rosenfield writes it's the modern-day equivalent of that old movie cliche when a bully would steal a dorky kid's love letter and paper the school with it to humiliate the kid. The difference is it's adults in their 30s now doing the humiliating. But all of that led to some other debates about what is and is not appropriate in modern dating. Some men responded they've been told they should not ask women out in person because it's too aggressive and could force uncomfortable women to accept because they feel cornered. Well, where are the modern lines? And what's changing? Our guests are here to discuss it, and we're glad that they are with us in studio. Allie O'Malley is here, a domestic violence prevention advocate and an educator that we know very well. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Hello to Jessica Lewis, who is, boy, she's done so much in our community, but did you know she's also the creator of Single Dope Black Chick since 2017?
Actually, since 2019.
2019?
Yeah, it's a new blog.
A new blog. Yes. Well, it's great to have you here in studio. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Hello to Eliza Light, who is a junior at the College of the Atlantic in Maine. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
And Regan Wagner is a senior at Nazareth College. Welcome to you.
Thanks, Evan.
And hello to Megan Barrett, a certified sex therapist with the Rochester Center for Sexual Wellness. Welcome. Thanks for being here.
Glad to be here.
All right, so a lot of ground to cover in a lot of different directions here, but let me start sort of with a general question to all of you about whether you have, you know, sort of whether you perceive any changing norms or, you know, whether it's even possible to kind of perceive it in real time when the expectations and norms are changing. Maybe, Allie O'Malley, with the advent of the Me Too era, if we're going to use that sort of term or sort of mark that line, maybe this is one of those rare times where it's more possible to notice changing norms. What do you think?
Well, I do think that there are significant changes just relationally, how we connect with one another. And so much of that is done behind a screen today instead of face to face. And so generationally, I feel a little bit removed from this because I don't choose to relate that way most of the time. But I watch my kids and I worry. I'm generally concerned about their ability to forge face to face relationships, especially around issues like dating. When I think back to my teenage years, I just turned 50 last year, but when I think of my teenage years, I mean, that anxiety about asking and being asked was kind of part of the maturity process and part of how you come to know yourself. So I think there's some wonderful things about kind of the new world and being able to meet people you might not otherwise encounter through technology. But I have some serious concerns about that becoming the only method in which we engage.
Well, Jessica, you know, in our interactions before the program, you know, I expressed real interest in why you wanted to create the blog in the first place. So why don't you tell us a little bit about the creation of Single Dope Black Chick, and then we'll kind of talk about how you see the dating scene.
Yes. So Single Dope Black Chick is a platform designed to really change the narrative around what it means to be single, because often when you reach a certain age, there's an expectation that you should be married with kids. And so if you're single and you don't have a man, people are like, aw, you know what I mean? And so my whole idea around it was to really define what it meant in this new decade that we're in. And so Single Dope Black Chick is really just designed to like redefine what it means to be single in this era.
Okay. People can find you online where?
Yes, at singledopeblackchick.com. And I'm on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter.
So what have you seen in terms of norms or expectations for dating? Have you seen any changes?
Definitely. And actually, on the positive side, I've actually seen more women going for what they want. I've seen more women shooting their shot. I've seen more women asking men out because sometimes you feel like if you're just sitting back and waiting to be asked, it might not happen. And so women are taking more control. And I say, hey, more power to you.
And we will get back into the subject of face-to-face interaction, which Jessica, and really everyone here has a lot to say about that coming up here. Before I turn to the students at the table, not to make it a generational thing, but I think it's always interesting. Megan Barrett, why don't you grab that microphone and tell us just a little bit from your perspective as a certified sex therapist with the Rochester Center for Sexual Wellness, if you have seen changes to norms or expectations on the dating scene.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just a journey of just self-actualization. I think people are really interested in what is it that they are desiring? What are they looking for? What are they wanting to connect to? And I think it's a kind of an interpersonal journey for self, but also kind of putting self in that vulnerable space of, you know, meeting with others and them presenting themselves and how we kind of dance with each other and if that feels right. So I think there's a lot more opportunity to find that spark within self. What are we looking for? And kind of like what Jessica was saying, go and grab that and having some self-permission to do that.
So most of the changes you've seen, you'd say, are in the healthy category?
I think that, I mean, I think we're having dialogue, at least in my office we are, which is great. And I think that's healthy dialogue to have.
Okay. Eliza, what have you sort of seen? I mean, you're a junior at the College of the Atlantic in Maine. And why don't you kind of give me a sense for what the dating scene looks and sort of feels like from your perspective?
So specifically within Maine, it's kind of a quirky dating scene, I'd say. I live on a small island called Mount Desert Island, which has Acadia National Park. And so I think a lot of my classmates reach out to Tinder and JSwipe and Bumble and a few different other apps and online sites to try to find mates. And I think when I was younger, sort of in high school, probably too young to be on all these sites anyway, I looked for partners online because I, you know, wanted to experience the whole entire world. And as I've gotten older, I've realized that my interests are kind of niche and I, you know, I need a partner and friendships that really help me cultivate those interests instead of reaching out to people that I may have nothing in common with.
Okay. And to the extent that you have been in that world, and I've had to sort of learn, I think before the program began, I was sort of reading and trying to kind of refresh on what's out there in the online dating world. And in the app world, I confused Grindr with Bumble. You know, I mean, like, so there's, I'm learning. I'm trying to catch up here. But generally speaking, do you find that that's an effective way to find people, whether it's dating or people with common interests, or is it sort of clumsy and frustrating?
I think all of my most incredible connections that I've made with other people have been through meeting them in person and not online.
Are you thinking going forward that that will be the case? Or are you
100%.
That's
yes.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Why do you think that is?
I think in terms of social media, you can put up this beautiful, well-curated facade, and it's just not accurate. Mm. And I think seeing this beautiful facade of someone, at least for me, kind of puts me in this realm of making them perfect. And people are imperfect. And some issues that I've run into and I've had friends run into is that you meet this person online and it's just this one-on-one, very isolated interaction. Whereas if you meet someone in public, you're seeing the way that they're interacting with waiters and their friends and your friends. And you know, it's just not as curated, you know? Also, pheromones and charisma and, you know, just the way someone's voice sounds is so, so important.
Yeah. Regan, what's your experience so far with that?
As far as online dating, I did meet my boyfriend of 1 year on Tinder, which is sometimes an awkward thing to share with people.
But can I ask why? I mean, we had a colleague who now has moved on to do other things, but a colleague, I think she'd probably even be fine with me mentioning this, because I think Caitlin's always on Twitter saying she's a big defender of sort of the Tinder dating and the opportunities. Again, understanding that it can be tough to find people that match up, but that there are still success stories.
Sure. And I think if you're part of like a small community, as Eliza was saying as well earlier, that it's nice to have somewhere else to reach out and see if you connect with someone. I still am a huge advocate of meeting people in person, though. Mm-hmm. Like, obviously you still... or it's important for me at least to meet someone in person to get to really know them. And I think that there is something to be said for asking people out in person and things like that. But I think that the dating game has changed a lot in terms of the rules. Like, the whole rule set has been thrown out. We used to like have to know how to approach someone and how to like court them, quote unquote, and things like that. But now we don't really know what the rules are, so you have to kind of create your own boundaries.
Is there a stigma to telling people, yeah, I met my boyfriend on Tinder?
Absolutely.
Even among your peers?
Yeah, I feel awkward about it sometimes. But I mean, it's, they're still a real person, you know, even though you met them online, the person that you met is still, you know, a real person who you can have a real connection with, you know.
But why do you think that stigma exists then?
I don't know. There's just something about meeting people in person. Do you have something to
weigh yeah,
in
Jessica
on that?
Wants yeah. to grab. Go ahead.
Yes, let me chime in. I think that there is this thought that there is an air of desperation when you go to an online dating site to meet someone. Like, you can't meet someone in person. What's going on? Are you socially awkward or something? And so for those who have tried dating online, you kind of shy away from telling people because you don't want other people to think a certain way about you. And I've actually tried online dating and have not found success, hence being the single dope black chick. You know, but I know people who have tried it and have found success.
Yeah, that's a very interesting analysis of it. I mean, you agree there, Regan, and you think that there's an assumption that, oh, you had to go online to date.
Sure, like you couldn't find someone and like, oh, I'm sorry, like you couldn't find someone in your own social circle. So, you know, you had
but
to...
But online is just like the next frontier of actually meeting human beings.
It is, okay. And I have a friend who I was talking to actually the other day. She said she's not quite comfortable with like the apps and things, but people still do, you know, reach out to people on Instagram and other social medias, mm-hmm. like friends of friends and things like that, sliding into people's like direct messages, DMs. Has become
sliding
a
into
big
the DMs.
Thing. Yeah.
Eliza, you want to jump back in? Go ahead.
I think one of the fundamental reasons behind why people have such sort of a stigma around it is if you just look at the Disney movies that we all grew up on and, you know, some of us know and love and some of us know and hate for very good reasons. But they weren't swiping on a phone or meeting people online.
Actually, I just rewatched Aladdin with my son. Mm-hmm. Did not know that Aladdin and Jasmine met on Tinder.
Oh, tell me more.
I had forgotten that part of it.
Yeah.
You're right that there's it's viewed maybe as there's sort of a romanticizing mm-hmm. ideal of sort of that whole courtship thing. And maybe even that's built into our expectations at a young age.
Completely. We don't see it too often in rom-coms, and so therefore it's not seen as incredibly valid.
Let me ask the therapist in the room to kind of jump back in. Go ahead.
I think those expectations and these kind of cultural myths are so important to talk about that we carry in. And the Disney reference is very poignant into that conversation because you know, we kind of romanticize this idea of meeting someone that is, you know, it's going to be the spark. It's going to be this kind of lightning effect, and it's just going to have this world-changing viewpoint for us. And relationships take vulnerability and authenticity and time and connecting in joyous ways and adventurous ways, but as well as painful and fear. And I mean, there's just so many layers that the Disney relationships do not unfold for us. Mm-hmm.
Allie O'Malley, do you look at dating apps, given the fact that, you know, they didn't exist when you and I were sort of in our early dating years? And do you think that's going to be a part of life going forward now? I mean, like, that's just part of life. Or do you have a fear that maybe generally speaking, there, you know, any concerns about the interactions that would happen via those kind of apps?
Well, I do think that they are the new normal. And I mm-hmm. think that the nature of a dating app in its kind of purest intentional sense is that how do you make the introduction? You know, for generations, people have been introduced to their soulmate, their dating partner by somebody who knew them and said, oh, I think you and this person would be great together. So the dating app gives you the opportunity to go out and read somebody's profile and say, hey, I think I might actually like this person based on what they're telling me about themselves. Where there's some potential risk is, you know, and it's become kind of a meme, to use a young person's term, this idea that the person you see on the dating app is not the person you get when mm-hmm. they show up mm-hmm. for that first date. And certainly that happens. But I do think that there are a lot of very well-intended people looking to meet someone, wanting to be in relationship and not having an opportunity, maybe not having a big social circle, being in a small community, being new to a community, having undergone a major life shift, and not knowing how to navigate. And so the online mechanism gives you a way to make a connection with somebody that feels a little less risky, maybe.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that representational aspect versus reality, because I think that we should hit a couple of points here. I generally share Phoebe Maltz-Bovey's concern that we probably really should be very careful not to just take a screen cap and shame someone's dating profile if mm-hmm. you think that they, however they're presenting themselves, they're probably doing their best. You know, like we all are, right? And that can be really hard. So I definitely share that. At the same time, I'm curious to know, generally speaking, what our guests in the room, like what your sort of experience with reality versus representation. In other words, if you had 10 dates with people who you met via dating apps, what percentage, how many of those 10 do you think you'd meet in person and be like, you are nothing like the person that I saw in this app? What would you guess out of 10?
Oh, gosh. Do you have a guess?
I think mine is probably going to be different than...
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what's your number?
I would say 9 times out of 10, the person is not in person as they've sort of created on the dating app. And that
and,
might
and
be...
I don't just mean looks, by the way. And I think you're saying the same thing.
Completely.
Could be a number
and
of
I
things.
Think, you know, that is partially me and sort of my high standards for mm-hmm. people and relationships and morals and ethics. But
9 out of 10. I can see why you don't want to get back on the app scene.
And that's generous.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
You looked shocked when you heard 9 out of 10.
I'd share in that high number. I'd probably be like a 7 or an 8 around there because it's hard. You can't tell how they're going to hold themselves or personality. You can't really tell. Like, I think genuinely, like, you can tell what they like, but how it all comes together always kind of tends to be different.
Okay.
But I think that holds true across social media in general, yeah. right? So people only put they tell the idyllic story of themselves online. They don't share negative things unless they're going to get a positive reaction, like a family member passes away and they put that out and then they get all this affirmation back. You know, that kind of thing is okay to share, but you're in a really dark, sad, scary place. A lot of people don't put that online, you know? So we only want to tell the story that we want to tell. And I think that's true even in face-to-face dating. You know, it takes a couple of dates to really get to know someone. And are they selling you, you know, what you think they're selling you? Or is there something else going on there? And that's certainly the work that I've been doing for a long time is where I see the challenges.
So that's really interesting. Let's hit this from a couple of different sort of points in the panel here. I want to hear everyone's take on this because Allie just took us beyond a dating, like a Tinder profile, and you meet the person, they're not what you expected, to say your Facebook profile might not be the perfect representation of your life. And, you know, Eliza, you were saying that your standards are very high, authenticity, morals, and ethics. So what's your expectation? When you meet someone, what define authentic for me? Because a first date, a second date, a third date, to Allie's point, we're all trying to be our best selves. You know, I mean, and we're not comfortable enough yet with a person. But or maybe you think that's wrong. Maybe you think you ought to just be comfortable right out of the gate, putting on no airs at all, and sort of take it or leave it. How do you view that?
I understand that, you know, sort of right out of the gate, people are going to be anxious and, you know, my palms sweat a ton and I just wear black or a lot of patterns on all of my dates for that reason. And so I'm not asking for, you know, your mother's social security number when I go out on a first date with you. I'm, you know, I'm not asking for your deepest fears. I just, you know, some connection where, you know, you ask me things about myself. You don't look at my profile and assume everything that I love, and I'll try to not assume everything that you love. And I think I've run into this issue a few times where I love fisheries. I'm kind of a weird fisheries freak. I study fisheries and aquaculture. So when I see on a profile, you know, that someone loves environmental policy or environmental science, I kind of get giddy and my stomach turns into knots. And then I meet the person and I start asking hard questions about, you know, what's happening in the world's atmosphere. And they don't want anything to do with that conversation at all.
They wanted the credit for putting it on a profile.
Exactly. And so I think, and everyone is doing their best. And that's so valid and so understandable. But I think so many people put something out there just because they know that it'll get a response, or that they know, oh, if I put that I'm in med school, it's going to put me on the top of so many other people's profiles. And I think that is not an authentic way of doing it.
Okay, but could it be aspirational? Could the guy that you're sitting down with and he says, look, I got a lot to learn, but I care about this. That's why I put it on there.
Well, then that's authentic, mm-hmm. right?
Okay.
Like,
okay.
Let's, you know, let's talk about it then. Let's
okay.
engage.
All right. Fair enough. Jessica, what's authentic and what's your expectation given that, you know, I mean, I think we want to present our best selves in a lot of different settings. What's your expectation?
Yeah, I think my expectation, I love what you said about being authentic. That authenticity is appreciated because we can be whoever we want to be online. And you know what? I do PR for a living. So guess what? I am who I want to be online as well. So I totally get it. But when you take the time to meet a person to have a conversation, there's some things that we can discern as women. And so you can really get a feel for a person. And I tried online dating. I had about two bouts, if you will. And the first time I met a person in person, and he was exactly who I thought he was going to be. It didn't work out, but he was who he presented himself
sure.
to be. And I appreciated that. The second time around, not so much luck. You know, I'm not opposed to it. But I think, again, that in-person opportunity is just, it's more authentic.
Okay. Well, let me turn to Megan Barrett, a certified sex therapist with the Rochester Center for Sexual Wellness, because I'm thinking in this part of the conversation about Gia Tolentino, who's got a new book. New, it's 2019, so now that's an old book. That's scary. But maybe Emma Ray and Megan can help me pull up the name of Gia Tolentino's book, because you got to listen to her conversation with Ezra Klein, where she talks about everything as sort of a performance society. Mm-hmm. And that's not to say that that's unnatural. I mean, that's life. When you're in a job interview, you are performing. When you're at work, you are performing. When you are out with friends, you may be sort of a different side of you. These are all parts of yourself in a sense. And what I took from Gia Tolentino and that conversation with Ezra Klein was that I'm going to be the less stressed when I'm feeling like I'm performing the least. So however I can get myself to a place in my life where the me that you're experiencing is as close to whatever the me is that I think of it. And it's not shifting all the time. And I know there's a lot sort of goes into that. Frankly, there are societal advantages. I mean, I'm not someone who's a person of color who's ever had to think about code switching and all the different pressures. But I am still thinking about the fact that it is human to perform. How do you get to a place where you're comfortable enough that even though, hey, it's first date, you're trying to be your best self, but you're not sort of totally misrepping? You know, does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a fine line that we're kind of differentiating here is this: we're putting only our best selves forward versus deception. right, or a false persona
yeah.
that's being represented online and maybe in some profiles where we're indicating or checking these boxes that this applies to me and it really actually has, I have no intention of that ever applying to me. I'm doing it to get more likes or responses. I mean, and that to me is different than putting my best foot forward. That is a deception. So I think differentiating the two, because I agree, I think, and across the board, whether we're talking about online dating or face-to-face, we are humans that want to protect ourselves, and vulnerability is real, and it affects all of us. And so there are layers to that of how much we want to put out in an interaction, whether it be online or in person. And so there's layers to that, and that takes time, and that takes a sense of security and feedback from that person that, okay, I can share a little bit more, or here's another little piece, or I can offer this into, you know, our relational dynamic. I
sure.
think that takes time.
Yeah, I mean, I always find it a compliment if people meet me and say, boy, you're just like you are on the radio, except for you use a few more of the words George Carlin said you can't say. Or, you know, when people will say, you know, you sound the same as you do on the radio. Like, what's your radio voice? Like, well, this is my radio voice. Authenticity, it's just easier. It's less stressful, to sort of to Eliza's point. Like, it is less stressful when you are not sort of always carrying on in a certain way. But the follow-up I wanted to ask you was about sort of the Facebook generation, which is that I get the point that, well, Facebook too often or often enough is this sort of kind of buffed up, idealized version of your life. But I also understand the human psychology for why people do that. I mean, that's almost an aspirational. Your Facebook profile is often an aspirational part of yourself too. And I've probably been that guy. I mean, do you have a problem with that, or do you think it's unhealthy?
To having that just kind of that best persona
sure.
forward. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I guess if we're looking at that's my only way that I put myself out there with others, and I attempt to connect with others in this, you know, kind of more of a tunnel vision approach of this is my only self that I put out there through Facebook, then I think you can kind of get into some, you know, unhealthy avenues. But if you are engaging in a lot of diverse types of relationships and you're putting yourself out there to connect with lots of different people and lots of different platforms. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I guess I see that as more of a healthy approach of how you're connecting in different
sure.
means versus just through online. And,
sure.
and I'm living in only that kind of false reality. Or am I diversifying my connections with others?
Okay. Jessica, you want to add to that?
Yeah, just really briefly. You know, one thing about Facebook and any social media platform, it has really given people a direct way to judge others. So mm-hmm. if you aren't putting out your best self, if you're putting when somebody dies or when you're sad or when you're depressed or going through, people will always be like, well, you're fishing for something. You know, it's like you can never be enough, no matter whether you're putting out just the good things or mm-hmm. if you decide to divulge the bad. And then why do people have to divulge the bad? If they don't want to, maybe that's something private that they want to keep to themselves. And that doesn't necessarily mean they're not being authentic. They're just choosing to keep some things to themselves. And I don't think we should judge them for doing so.
Okay. I think a lot of good perspectives here. We got to get our only break of the hour. And when we come back, we'll take some of your feedback. If you want to call the program, it's 844-295-TALK. It's toll free, 844-295-8255. 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. You can email the program connections@WXXI.org. We're going to talk about taking no for an answer. That's an important point of conversation that's come up in the last few days as we've kind of gotten ready for this program. As we talk about changing norms and expectations of what's appropriate and what's inappropriate. And we'll get back to that question about asking someone out in person and whether that's considered aggressive these days. So much more to share and your feedback as well. Next. Coming up in our second hour, If All Rochester Wrote the Same Song. It's an annual event in which local musicians and songwriters are given a challenge. Write a song under one chosen song title. The song title for 2020 is No One Will Ever Know. So what are local musicians doing with it? You're going to hear some of their versions. We'll close the week with some music next hour. Real quick, before we get to your feedback, as we talk about the changing norms and expectations for dating, poor Eliza Light thought she was going to sneak in a story during the break here. She's a junior at the College of the Atlantic in Maine. Didn't have time to sneak it in. And we said, you're going to have to do it on the air because you said you wanted to tell the panel. Now you got to tell all the listeners the first question you ask someone on a date.
Well, regardless of whether or not I've met the person online, probably the first question or, you know, close second or third question is, what conspiracy theories do you believe in? And what should I be curious about?
Have you ever gotten like a really good answer? Like, I don't...
I've gotten some wonderful answers, but I don't know if we could consider them wonderful.
Oh, okay. And again, not to shame, because we're not going to share any names or whatever, but are there any examples, you know, that come to mind?
I think none that are air appropriate.
None that are air appropriate. Okay. Have you continued with the date?
Yes.
Yes, you are an amazing person. That's something. Even though you knew at that very moment, there's no potential here.
I mean, a free dinner is a free dinner, you know? I'm really, that's more of a joke.
The first question, well, now that we're on the subject, no, poor Rich has been waiting too long. I'm going to grab Rich's phone call and then maybe I'll ask, what would be your first question? That's very interesting. I had a friend of a friend say their first question is, are you okay if we get married with all holidays being with my family? Mm. And if no, it's over. That's a hard standard, but you got to know 10 minutes in for some people. Conspiracy theories for Eliza. Rich in Rochester on the phone. Go ahead, Rich.
That's really interesting. And just really quick, because of my stance, when I was out in the dating world, the thing I would always say quickly is, I'm a humanist atheist. Just to get that out of the air, because so many people are religious, I've had women stand up and just walk out. And there I am sitting at the table by myself. So I think there are things that either need to be asked or got out quickly because they can be problems. But getting back to what I called about, I think sometimes we're a little harsh on the people online. And I'm thinking, you know, first of all, how much of what we see in their profile is about what we project from ourselves? How much of what we see and we focus on is because of what we want to see? Mm-hmm. And also about your authentic self, I think that's sort of almost a misnomer, mm-hmm. because people are constantly changing. And I think people are honest. I think people are as forthright as they need to be. If you don't ask me, like, well, do you have a pet? Why would I answer the question? Or why would I talk about it? I think this is such a organic thing. I think we need to be a little bit more accepting that someone's not going to tell you that they don't like pets the first time that they meet you or something like that. But I think our expectations are really sometimes just over the top. And I haven't had that much. I guess when I first broke up with my ex, I did do some online dating for a while. Mm-hmm. I didn't have a lot of it, but I think the things about people being dishonest is one thing, but if someone is just being as forthright as they need to be, and then a lot of times it's just chemistry. You meet someone and you're like, oh gosh, this is not the person. If they were the person that they are, but you didn't see the person that they are until you meet them and you feel the chemistry.
Well, so Rich, let me ask you a quick question, because I think you're raising a really wise point, which is that the word authentic, we're sort of acting like you're either authentic or you're inauthentic. And sort of to Jessica's point, you know, every little part that you do project is a part of you. I mean, there's not like it's more of a sliding scale. I mean, are you 100%? I don't know. But I think the point is a good one, that sometimes we just bifurcate it into authentic and inauthentic, and you've come from one door or the other, and that doesn't really work that way. I think what we're hearing from panelists is that they have all, everybody's got their own needs to understand about somebody early on. For Eliza, she just wants to know if you think 9/11 was an inside job.
It's important stuff.
You know, whereas...
Well, I think that's really important, too.
That's probably important. Whereas... yeah. But for you, Rich, so let me ask you, is it okay, do you think, on a first date to ask about someone's politics and who they voted for?
Yeah. If you say to me, I voted for Donald Trump and I still support him, it's a non-starter. How are we going to even at this point, after 3 to 4 years into a president that I just totally diametrically opposed to just about everything he does. Not everything, but a lot of it. And that tells me a lot about who you are. That's the reality of it in my world. Or if you tell me that you're a born again Christian, in my world, that's a non-starter for me.
Okay.
I can't.
Okay.
We are just not going to go forward.
Okay.
And you're probably going to walk out of the date because I'm the embodiment of Satan in your eyes, probably. So
I don't think Satan, Rich. I've gotten to know you, but I take the I take the point. Hey, thank you, Rich. Thanks for the phone call. And so, I think that question of authenticity is a fair one. It's not like there's just one or the other, and it's a matter of what you need to know about somebody. So Eliza gave us her first question. So Regan, unfortunately, you have to blame her for this. But what would be your first question?
Oh gosh, I think the first thing I want to know about someone is mostly like what they love and like what's at the core of them and what they really like. I mean, really deeply care about.
Mm-hmm.
Or a lot of the times, I'll ask people, even just that I work with, this to get to know them. Like, if you could be doing one thing and that you love and just like getting paid for it, and that was like your life, what would it be?
So you think that tells you a lot about a person?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's a great question. Jessica, is there a question for you that has to come up in a first date that you have to have an answer to? Not necessarily?
Not really. The only thing that I was thinking about is like, if I meet someone online, I want to know like, well, what brought you here? You know? So that would only be my question for an online situation.
Okay. The politics stuff, is that relevant to you?
It is, but I wouldn't ask that.
You feel like that's going to come up eventually anyway,
yeah,
right?
Like right.
If this thing's going anywhere, I don't think we're walking down the aisle not knowing, I don't know who you voted for. You know, I have really no idea. That would be surprising. And some people can make it work. Some cannot. Let's talk about that question that was raised earlier this hour about asking someone out in person. Ali O'Malley, there were a number of generally guys online who were sort of raising a concern that they've been told, find a different way. It's too aggressive in the modern era that women especially might feel trapped into saying yes. Don't be so aggressive. And they were sort of confused. And I think we're probably missing some context there because that's a big generalization. And there's probably a lot of different kinds of interactions that may be appropriate and some less so. But what do you think about in interpersonal interaction and asking someone on dates?
Well, in the most general stance,
yeah.
I would say that I actually, my preference would be that people did relate directly face to face and go through that process of trying to connect with another person, which brings in that authenticity automatically, because very few people can just walk up to someone they're interested in and ask them out without have any hesitancy, you know, that fear of rejection or for the person who's being asked. Because I do think today one of the major shifts is that anybody can ask for a date. It doesn't have to be the man asking the woman, you know, and the woman on the receiving end. So I think the notion that when men ask a woman on a date, they're being too pushy I think it's absurd. Even in this era of Me Too. Now, put some context in that. If it is your boss, or your boss's, you know, colleague, and they're at the same level and you are a subordinate to them, there needs to be some consideration of that role and are they attempting to use that role to get something that they want?
What about a situation where someone has already said no? Let me read a couple things and we'll go around the table on this one here. I'm going to go back to Stacey Rubus's classic 1984 dating advice book. Here's what she advises women, young women. People who win out in love again and again are the people who don't take no for an answer. They try harder, and they wait longer, and they keep asking. And in the end, it pays off royally. The pursuee says yes to the pursuer because true desire is something that no sane person can resist.
Okay.
So does that sound insane to anybody but me?
Well, it actually doesn't sound.
It
doesn't sound insane to me, and here's why. Because I think the dynamics of courtship at that time were different. So today, if you ask me out on a date and I say no, you need to take my no at face value that day. And if we are in a common social circle and you're still interested in me and you want to try to win me over a course of a few months in that social dynamic that we're involved in, you might come back and ask me out again.
I take that
at some point in the future. And I might say yes, because maybe now I've gotten to know you better and you're not who I thought you were. So in the context of that example and that time and how you might be part of a group of people getting to know one another, I think it could be appropriate to ask again and, in her words, be persistent.
You think that's more the context of that line from 1984?
I do. Okay. Yeah, thinking back, you know. And I do think that a lot of people do meet at work. And so a little bit of what worries me about Me Too is this notion that you can't fraternize with people that you work with. I mean, I met my husband at work, and we were not peer-subordinate situation. We were peers. But it was and I had developed a wonderful group of friends that led to me being able to marry a really great guy. So that dynamic of, you know, it's when is it appropriate? If somebody says no, honor the no. It doesn't mean you can never ask again. But, you know, paying attention to the social cues and how you're beginning to relate to this person, because you might be asked out by somebody at one time you're not interested in. You get to know them better. You may want to ask them out. And they also have the right to say no. Mm-hmm. So I asked you once and you said no, and maybe that's enough for me. And now you're interested in me and I'm not sure I want to go there. So honoring the no is important whichever direction it goes.
All right, let's go around the table. Megan Barrett next here. What do you make of this idea of knowing how to honor that no and how to do it appropriately?
Yeah, I mean, I think I echo a lot of kind of what Allie was talking about. But one thing when I was kind of reading through that tweet was this, and it appeared, and again, context is everything,
sure,
but it appeared that this individual was seeking some sort of feedback or validation or understanding from his coworkers or other, you know, peer group of what he did was appropriate or inappropriate. And I guess my feedback back to him would be the most important person to check in with is that individual that you asked out to check in, to be curious of, was that too forward? Did that feel uncomfortable? Was that an okay situation that I did that? And allow that person to provide direct feedback.
That's different than saying, tell me why you said no.
Correct.
Which we'll get
to
in a second. But the bottom...
It remains a curiosity.
Okay, sure.
Versus that demand entitlement position.
Okay. Yeah. Jessica, you had some strong feelings on the idea that people shouldn't ask people out in person. Why do you think that that's a good thing?
Yeah. Again, because I think like the best relationships come from when you actually meet a person and you're, you know, just chatting with them and getting to know them. And sometimes it's not always about what you say, it's how you say it. You know, so maybe you do want to know why. And I think that's okay. But it's how. You know what I mean? Like if a person is generally not interested in you, maybe today is not the best day and I'm just not in the mood for it. But after I've had a chance to get to know you, I might reconsider. You know, so I think we have to be careful about being too sensitive. That's the only word coming to mind right now. But, you know, give people a chance. Like, we don't have to always have our guard up all the time and think that people are coming at us in the wrong way.
Interesting. Now,
I like that point. I'm sorry. I just want to jump in. There is something culturally different today with this, like instant gratification, like one shot and done. And that's just not really how the world works. I mean, if you ever really aspire to anything, you have to be willing to take risks. The same is true in relationships. So I think part of that general conversation on Twitter was kind of this notion of one and done and not knowing again whether the person felt pressured or what made the person who posted ask his colleagues if it was out of line what he did. You know, we don't know what's happening there, but
yep.
I just think that it's interesting to think that through.
Yeah. Regan, what's an example of sort of an inappropriate sort of follow-up after a person's gotten to know versus maybe an appropriate way to try again?
Sure. I was actually talking to some coworkers about this the other day because they were all saying, like, we do appreciate, like, getting asked out in person, you know, rather than online, like, it can be, like, really nice sometimes. It can be really flattering. And if you do it the right way, it can make for a great relationship, but or a great date even. But I would say that there are some situational times when it is a little bit less appropriate. We were talking about kind of getting asked out at work in a time where not even it's a coworker, maybe it's a customer, and having people who come back and like are hounding you, and it's at your place of work and you can't escape, or like it's hard to walk away, and you kind of, you have to provide them with like a service or something, something like that. And it's really, it can be really very uncomfortable.
I would say that crosses into stalking behavior, frankly. Yeah,
absolutely. So, you know, you have to have respect for other people, especially if you're considering asking them out, wanting to form a relationship with them.
Okay, Eliza?
I also think that in terms of asking someone out in person, there's sort of spaces that are more inherently community-based, and then other spaces that are, you know, sort of seem more private even if they're public. So, for instance, if I'm walking down the sidewalk and I have headphones in, you know, I'd say 1,000 times out of 1,000 times, I don't want someone crossing the street to ask me out. You know, I don't care if I am, you know, wearing something or have some sort of anything on me that is like, oh, well, we might have a common interest. It's like, I'm on the sidewalk and I don't want you to talk to me, right? Whereas my parents, my mom was wandering around the Metropolitan Museum of Art, and my dad saw her looking at all these different art pieces and went up and started talking to her. And so I think
bold
move. And 30 years later, it's still working, knock on wood.
Still cool. That approach still works today.
Yes. I think, you know, if someone is walking around in an art museum and they have headphones in and they're, you know, just minding their own business and they're not making any eye contact, well, then I say, don't go up to them, you know, don't go for it. So I think there's spaces that are a little bit more friendly for the ask out situation than others.
Okay. And the follow up to that is this idea that some people, and again, the stereotype would be men, but some people generally want an explanation. And Chris writes to basically say, what's inappropriate is when the person being asked says no and the person asking pushes for a valid reason rather than accepting the no as a complete sentence. You know, no one's entitled, I don't think, to get like a dissertation on why the person you wanted to go out with said no. I think if they don't want to tell you, they don't want to talk about it. And unfortunately, we probably all know somebody who has been sort of hounded either in text messages, social apps, like, well, how come? What's wrong? What's wrong with me? That is not okay. And the question is, what do you do with that? So briefly speaking, let's kind of go around the table. Jessica, what do you do with that if people are coming after it saying, well, tell me why. What's wrong? I just want to buy you a drink. Unfortunately, I've seen stuff like that too.
Well, you know, you might catch me on the right day and I might tell you why. Not in a rude, but I just might. I don't know.
Blunt, right? You're asking.
Yeah, so I might just, and it might not be a negative thing. Maybe I just don't think that we're compatible.
Sure.
Or we might not have common interest, whatever, but I might just, I don't know.
Okay. What do you think, Megan?
I would say it's an opportunity to tolerate ambiguity. I mean, I think dating is all about ambiguity. And sometimes you just don't know and how you tolerate that and how you accept that and how you soothe through that instead of demanding that that other person soothes that for you.
Okay. Allie, are you concerned, given the work that you've done in your career, do you get nervous when you see people really starting to get pushy, asking, demanding, and sort of hounding when a person on the other end is clearly trying to end the communication?
Well, it's a huge red flag for me, given my work experience and life experience. But what's sitting with me right now is not so much the dynamic of asking out on a date and then hounding a person as to why. I mean, I have certainly seen people in a bar, somebody buys them a drink from across the room and they say, no, thank you. And that person gets upset. And sometimes there's a scene and that kind of thing, which it's just absurd behavior. That's just absurd behavior. And it is entitlement, to your point. Like, I'm going to do this for you. Well, that's fine, but I don't want you to, and that's my choice. So I think that's important to always be paying attention. My bigger concern is when a couple may have gone out a few times and then one person says, I really don't want to see you anymore. It's not working for me. I tried. And part of the dynamics of human beings is I may not be comfortable saying no when you ask me, but that's on me. That's not on you. And if I chose to go and I chose to see you a second time, and then at the third time I say, you know, this just isn't working for me and I would rather not see you anymore. And then the insistence comes in, you know, I bought you this. I did this for you. We went here. I paid for it. That kind of behavior, whether it's male or female, or even an LGBTQ relationship, those dynamics are never, ever healthy. Nobody ever really owes anyone anything. And we have a lot of work to do in our culture around understanding that.
30 seconds. Does it get more dangerous or precarious given technology, texting, and social media?
Absolutely more dangerous. More dangerous. It's an electronic leash.
Well, I want to thank all of our guests for being here and having this conversation and giving us a lot to think about as we think about changing norms, but in some ways, norms that haven't changed. So again, when you're at, I don't know, the Memorial Art Gallery, and you see an attractive person to you and they're wearing the headphones, let them be. They're doing their thing. But if they're not, you might have a multi-decade marriage ahead. See? That hasn't changed. Eliza, that's an awesome story, by the way. And I'm really glad you were here. Thank you very much. Eliza Light, Regan Wagner, students coming in sharing their experience. Thanks.
Thanks.
Thanks for saying yes. Allie O'Malley, always great to see you. Thanks very much for being here. Megan Barrett joining us from the Rochester Center for Sexual Wellness. Thank you very much. And thanks to Jessica Lewis, Single Dope Black Chick online. We'll find you there. Let's talk some more. Thanks for being here. More connections coming up.